Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to Packer Transplants Live. I am Aaron Nagler, and with me, as always, is Mr. Corey Banky, my partner here at Cheesehead TV. Directing our live blog is the esteemed Jamie Jors, and we'll be joined, as always, by John Rahor from Eat More Cheese, along with the best and brightest from around the Packers blogosphere. Corey, tell us, what's on tap tonight?
Joining us later tonight will be Packers beat writer for ESPN Milwaukee 540, Mr. Jason Wilde. We'll also have the extreme honor of speaking with the authors of Green Bay, my hometown, a team and its city, which is simply a must-own book for any Packers fan or Green Bay fan or Wisconsin fan or United States fan. But now, it's time for the good, the bad, and the ugly. We got the good. We got Aaron Rodgers.
You're on track to be NFL MVP.
Mason Crosby.
Tying his own record for the longest field goal in Packers history.
Sam Shields.
Sam, I've been a critic. But I got to give you love when you play well. Best game of the year.
And we got the bad. We got Jermichael Finley.
You catch 3 touchdowns. You go a week, not getting much. Then the ball is thrown to you in the end zone and you drop it.
AJ Hawk.
AJ, I probably shouldn't have put him here. He was good later on in the game. He was bad early in the game. Once he got his feet under him and once the defense adjusted, he was fine.
TJ Lang.
What I should have done is put both TJ Lang and Josh Sitton in the bad because both of them had a kind of a shaky game. But TJ specifically for that horrible sack given up at the first play of the second half. Packers get the ball. We're all excited. Here they go. They're going to go down and score. Oh, maybe not.
And we got the ugly himself, the ugly of the NFL, Jeff Triplett.
You know what I wish? I wish I was one of those people who commented on CheeseheadTV.com. Who's Jeff Triplett?
Oh, come on.
I wish I lived there. I wish I lived in the world of people who don't know who Jeff Triplett is.
I wish I lived in the world.
Completely gone. Just like done. Like they don't know about his existence.
I wish I lived in the world where Jeff Triplett didn't cost the NFL $26 million and still keep his job. I wished I live in that world. I don't live in that world.
No, you live in this one. Packers are 5-0.
Woo!
5-0.
With or without Jeff Triplett.
5-0, baby. Undefeated. Corey Banky, are you feeling the they make O undefeated vibe yet? Yeah, I thought you were as you run to adjust a camera. That's what happens. We're in the middle of our banter here. All of a sudden, Corey gets up, takes his headphones off, and runs across the studio. The studio, may I just say,
this is the end.
The end. Last week, we thought it was this is officially the end. Corey is moving.
This is the end.
Next week.
It's over.
After he gets back from throwback weekend.
I had to adjust my camera because it seemed like I was shorter than you.
You are shorter than I am. That's just
like. By like that much. You just gotta it deal looked with like it. I was
you
like
you just
a dwarf.
Gotta deal with it. Our last Packer transplants ever.
Into our first ever.
Throwback weekend,
come
baby.
Come on now. I still got the tickets right there.
This is it. This is the kickoff. Mm. For everyone
right
except Kyle Cousineau. This is the kickoff of Throwback Weekend. You'll notice my sweatshirt here tonight, ladies and gentlemen. I'm ready. I will not be
there
in attendance, as young Mr. Banky will, but I am there in spirit. And I can guarantee you everyone in the Nagler house will have old school blue and gold on Sunday for Throwback Weekend.
What? Colleen's asking what section.
I don't.
124, really? Row 5. Come on now. They're close to my grandfather's seats. My grandfather's like a little bit left. He's in the next section to the left.
To the left. Back and to the left. So, Corey, I know you're Mr. Like, the first quarter doesn't matter. There's nothing wrong.
It doesn't.
We got this.
No, wait. It matters. It matters for different reasons.
So, but here's my question. Were you ever, at any point in the first quarter of Sunday night's game, worried?
Nope.
Neither was I.
No.
And I have my wife as a witness to this.
I mean, no. What? What are you talking about?
Well, I'm talking about people being worried.
Yeah. I mean, spend a little time at Lambeau, okay? Spend a little time at Lambeau in 1980. Spend a little time in Lambeau in 1994. 1999.
The Ray Rhodes year.
Spend a little time. And then you don't get worried because there's nothing to worry about till the fourth quarter.
I will say, there was a point where the Packers had a 2nd and 18. I think it was in the third quarter. They had a 2nd and 18. And I wrote on Twitter, 2nd and 18 with Rodgers is like a 2nd and 8 with every other quarterback.
You know how the like cliche thing that every color announcer says in the NFL, okay, is, oh, I don't know if they have a 3rd and 16 in the bag. Well, you know what? The Packers have plenty.
Yeah, they do. They do.
When you're throwing to 12 people in one game.
12 dudes.
Come on, man.
Tying. This is interesting. I love this. Tying the record set by Brett Favre's Packers the evening after his father passed away.
There you go.
That was the last time that was done.
Booyah.
12 different receivers. That's crazy. That's crazy talk. Oh, and look at this. As Corey Tolley takes over my screen with Green Bay, a city and its team. Dr. James Hurley and Thomas Murphy will have Dr. Hurley on the line later tonight to talk about the book. If you have not purchased it, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know what you're doing.
It's pretty cool.
Go out, get it. It's simply amazing.
It is.
It's amazing. It seriously goes back to the pre-Lambo days. Days of the city teams. Green Bay and the Packers growing together. It is fascinating. It's filled with amazing pictures.
Incredible
stories. One picture in particular that is amazing is...
Oh, there it is.
Mr. Ted Thompson.
Oh, no. What's going on here?
Taken by Mr. Corey Behnke during Super Bowl week last year.
Oh, there we go.
That's so ghetto. We should have just found the JPEG and thrown it up. But yeah, no, it's just easier for Corey to throw the book in front of the camera.
That proves it's on the book live, dude.
I hear you.
Come on. That's like evidence in court. Boom.
Oh,
it's nice. It's got a little Cheesehead TV mention.
There you go. But it is. It's a fantastic book. I cannot recommend it enough. Even, I'm serious here, even non-Packer fans will love this book. If you're just like a person like, say, my mother, who can't stand the Packers but loves the state of Wisconsin,
yeah,
you will love this book.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a great gift for family members who maybe are not into the Packers.
It's on multiple levels. Yeah, there's like one chapter on the Packers. I mean, it's an extensive chapter.
I don't know about all that, but it's fantastic.
It's the biggest chapter, but...
It's fantastic. It's a great book.
It's really good.
You really have to check it out. So, Corey, let's talk about wide receivers. Let's talk about targets. Let's talk about reception.
Man.
Let's talk about Mike McCarthy getting all upset today. Being asked about Donald Driver's lack of participation in the offense.
Who was he in particular getting upset at?
Oh, I don't know. Well, here's the thing. Now, I know what you're about to say. I know where you're about to go.
I'm not saying anything.
I know, like, okay, yes, our guest tonight, I think he did this just because he knew he was coming on our program.
We have a guest tonight?
Mr. Jason Wilde asked Coach McCarthy about Donald Driver. And that apparently set off the coach.
This guest?
That's the guest. Coach wasn't too pleased. Coach got upset. Now, I can see both sides of this quote-unquote argument, although I don't really think it is one. Mike McCarthy and I think the Packers are sick and tired of people talking about whoever it is, week in and week out, who doesn't get involved with the offense as far as the receiving goes. Like, I understand that. I understand, look, you've got a potent offense. You've got a ton of weapons. Somebody, every week, somebody is not going to be involved.
Right. No, it's true.
Now, on the other side, I see Jason's point where his contention would be that Donald Driver is the all-time leading receiver with the Green Bay Packers. To see him phased out of the offense like that, to the point where at the end, the final drive of the game where they're going to kick the winning field goal, the field goal that pretty much iced the game, Donald Driver was not in for a single snap. It was all Randall Cobb.
Mm.
I think that's a legitimate question. So I see, but
you know what?
Like, why was Driver out of that drive?
I don't think it's not a legitimate question, but at the end of it, you have to step back, right?
Right.
The Green Bay Packers' strategy is dinking and dunking, finding guys open, pushing, doing what basically their strategy is.
It's just not
throw to the guy who's open and push them if you want.
It's just not a show until you say dinking and dunking.
It's a show put on by the Green Bay Packer offense Sunday or Monday or time they play. And every time the announcer's like, oh, they need to push the field. Guess what? They do that. And you're like, oh, my goodness, how did Aaron Rodgers throw the ball? How is this even existing? And how am I living right now as a Packer fan?
There are many times I ask myself, how am I living as a Packer fan? How am I living? But we'll have Jason on later tonight so we can talk to him about it. I'm sure he'll have plenty to say on the subject and everything else.
Yeah, I mean,
Packers. But dude,
it's a hard job.
Said something.
We're 5-0. If you're a writer, you
got to come up with something, right? Hey,
I feel
you made a great point before we went on air about, I know, shocking, stop the presses. But you made a great point before we went on air about if, you know, you're throwing to 12 different guys.
That's a good offense right there.
I mean, Tom Crabtree only had one catch. Are we going to write about that? DJ Williams only had one catch. Are we going to write about that?
I will say there was.
Now I know I'm being ridiculous.
Is it just me, or was there improvement when Tom Crabtree came in later?
I don't know what you're talking about, but I'll go with it. He was in all games because Corliss was hurt, so they had a lot more Crabtree in the mix. Hey, I'm always down for more Crabtree.
Yeah.
I know we have our anti-Crabtree people on the live blog occasionally. You mad people, you. But I'm down with it. DJ Williams, he's just not ready for prime time. I think he's got great hands. He looked really good in preseason and camp, catching the football. But, wow, he blew another blitz assignment this past Sunday. Similar, not exactly the same because he was online as opposed to in the backfield, but similar to the one he blew in preseason when Rodgers was stripped in the Cleveland game,
mm-hmm.
and it was run back for a touchdown. Just not ready for prime time. Just not there in the blocking and the blitz assignments, the blitz pickups, and that's why he hasn't seen the field much. And the reason he was in there on Sunday was because of Corliss' injury. So here's hoping Corliss gets back quick.
Yeah.
And how. Speaking of getting back quick, throwback weekend, the St. Louis Rams coming into Green Bay with Mr. Al Harris.
Wow.
Ready to man one of the corners. How much fun is this going to be?
Bring it.
I mean, I feel sorry. I feel sorry for Al. I really do.
I do.
He should be coming in as like the dime back, somebody who just comes in when they go wide and you can play like outside when they go four or five wide. Like that's, you know, but Lord, he's going to be matched up against Jennings, Nelson.
Oh, my goodness.
Like
it just makes throwback weekend that much more special.
Throwback weekend. Here's Al Harris. Throwback.
No, but I mean, just that we get the Rams. Let's talk about the Lions for just one second.
Wait, hold on. Before we do anything else, you have to hit that gong.
Oh, man.
Hit it. Dick Chang in the house. The Dick Chang gong is in full effect.
How many times are you supposed to hit it? Just once?
What, dude? We make this stuff up as we go. You know that.
That was better.
I love it.
You want to get the good sound out of it without knocking it over.
Raheem makes a great point. Put Driver on Harris. Make it fair.
Exactly. It won't be, though, because Driver
would totally smoke him.
Dude.
Come on. This is not even a fair fight. So you wanted to talk about the only other team in the NFL who's undefeated at this moment.
Why has it got to be the Lions?
The 5-0 Detroit Lions.
So annoying.
What do you want to talk about the Detroit Lions?
I'm a little fearful.
Fearful?
Yeah, we got to play them twice. That's not going to be fun.
Fearful?
I mean.
But fearful? You're Corey Behnke. Fearful?
Well, I want 16-0 now. So my expectations have been moved. My expectations have gone up to here now. What can I say?
I'm down with that.
We won the Super Bowl and
we're 5-0.
We're 5-0.
There you go.
And no one else is but the Lions. What? You know?
Oh, you know, only because he's going to be on our program later, I'm going to get a little plug in for Jason's Green and Gold Today program over there at ESPN Milwaukee.
Oh, yeah.
This morning, any loyal listener of Green and Gold Today will recognize Terrell, who calls in every week. He calls in so often they've actually limited his calls at this point. but he made a great point. When the Lions went 0-16, the final nail in their coffin was in Lambeau Field to make them 0-16. Mm. If the Packers were to go undefeated, the last game would be against the Lions to go to the proverbial 16-0. Mm. That's called symmetry. That's called written in the stars. Call the season off. It's over. It's going to happen. Packers 16-0. Booyah. Or perhaps not. Perhaps they have to play this game. Perhaps the Rams have a chance. The biggest line in Vegas this week, of course, yet again, Green Bay Packers. I got to say this. The Rams have a chance. I know no one's giving them a chance.
No.
The Rams do have a chance.
No. They don't.
Let me tell you why.
They don't.
Let me tell you why.
I'm just saying they don't, and you're not going to convince me. But go ahead.
Here's their chance. Steven Jackson pounding the football, keeping it away from Rodgers, and when Rodgers does have it, they cause a couple turnovers.
That's not going to happen.
That's
though.
It.
That's the
chance.
That is the key that they won't be able to find, my friend.
But that's it. That's their chance. That is it. Like, the Packers are pretty good against the run, so who knows?
Dude, he ain't Brett Favre. Two interceptions in five games. Come on.
No.
Come on.
But, hey, there are fumbles. We saw Ryan Grant put it on the carpet on Sunday night. I'm just saying, there's a chance.
I'm just saying, there's no chance.
The Rams have a chance. Not a good one.
No.
But it's a chance.
No.
So, you know, yeah, the Packers should roll. It should be like, you know, 342 to -4. But there's a chance.
No. I disagree.
I'm just trying to keep people,
I disagree,
you know.
Vehemently. There you go. I got it out finally.
Oh.
Let's talk about, why do so many people follow you on Twitter?
Oh, no. Let's not talk about that.
Okay, let's not.
Although there were some really good answers on Twitter to your query.
I was blown away. You're like Alex Talish over here. What's going on?
Oh, dear. Alex Talish built himself a loyal following. And
oh, yeah.
He did it right, and he did it. Well, God bless him.
He did it the old school way.
The old school way in that it was the new school way in that he was the first to do it.
Exactly.
So that's old school right there.
Yeah.
So, okay, tell me this, Corey Behnke. If the Packers are set to roll on Sunday.
Yes.
They're going to roll.
Yes.
The Rams have no chance.
No.
Do the Vikings have a chance?
No, they might
score
some points. Slow down.
No, I know that. I know, but you saying they have no chance to win.
Because
none whatsoever. There's no chance. The any given Sunday rule, gone. Suspended.
For the Rams.
No chance for the Rams.
For the Rams.
Got it. Following week, Minnesota Vikings. Do the Vikings have a chance?
I don't know. How good are their cornerbacks? How good are their safeties? Because they have to be really good. Like the best. Like the best safeties or cornerbacks. Tandem playing as a team, best in the NFL to beat this offense.
Okay,
because
what if we don't run?
We could never run the ball and just basically score it well.
So here's my question. So you're not worried about Robeson and Allen on the ends crashing down on Newhouse, Belaga, whoever's there, not from the Chad Clifton.
Not from the screens I've seen.
I'm just saying.
Not from the running we've done.
You know the Vikings are always problems.
No, totally.
In the dome.
The Bears,
not last year.
The Bears are always supposed to be a problem, but you know what? They have Jay Cutler, so they're not a problem anymore.
Hey, I'm just going to put this out there. Jay Cutler had a fantastic game on Monday night. He was like the only Bear that came to play.
Yeah, totally, but you can always rely on him for an interception.
This is true.
Okay?
Oh, that is true. But the Vikings are always problems for the Packers.
Totally, totally, totally.
Let's just remember this, people.
I love
reigning, wait. The defending Super Bowl champion Packers in 1997 went into the winless Indianapolis Colts stadium and lost. Put that in your pipe and smoke it.
Whatever.
There's always a chance, people.
No. Not this Sunday.
No, don't know me.
Not at Lambeau.
No, don't know me.
Not on Throwback
don't
Weekend.
Don't know me. Always a chance.
There you go.
I'm still taking the Packers, obviously. But
whatever.
There's a chance.
I mean, I'm taking the easy choice, right? So I understand that.
I hear you. It's hard. It's hard. I understand. It's hard to get excited about a game they're going to wax your opponent. So
not really.
You
not
know,
if you go
invent some like drama.
Yeah, Throwback Weekend.
Oh, when do you fly out for a Throwback Weekend?
That would be Saturday morning.
Nice. I'll be here. I'll be in the office if you need me.
Okay. You'll be in the studio dismantling it?
Yeah. Yeah.
This is it.
This is it. The last show ever.
Say goodbye to Inwood, Manhattan.
In our studios from Inwood, Manhattan.
We'll have to change the
intro.
That's unfortunate.
Oh, it
no,
really
I'm
is.
Just going to put my voice over Inwood, Manhattan. I'm going to say, from Chelsea, Manhattan.
Good God, help us. All right, so let me ask you this. Oh, wise one. Oh, ye of no worries when it comes to the Packers.
I have worries.
You do?
Yeah, I have worries about the offensive line like I do every year. But right. You know what? The fact that this team could replace tackles at will, it's pretty badass.
It is pretty badass.
I mean, come on.
Speaking of tackles and offensive linemen, Ray Dominguez brought up from the practice squad today while Nick Collins was finally officially put on injured reserve.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, it stinks, but... there it is. But so all our questions about Nick Collins, why has he been put on injured reserve? There you go, ladies and gentlemen. He's on injured reserve. It's about time to take a break. About that time.
Yeah.
Take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to one of the authors of Green Bay, A City and Its Team, talking Throwback Weekend. This book, I'm telling you, people, you want throwback? This book is throwback.
Definitely.
It throws down on the throwback. Check it out. Green Bay, A City and Its Team, coming up next here on Packer Transplants, CheeseheadTV.com. Ladies and gentlemen, we are back live on the line with Dr. James Hurley, one of the co-authors of Green Bay, A City and Its Team. You see it right here on your screen. Dr. Gurley, how are you tonight?
Well, I'm great. Thanks very much.
Thanks so much for coming on and sharing with us the experience of writing this book. I was saying before, it's just amazing. It's a must-own for any Green Bay Packer fan. What was the genesis of the project?
Well, you know, I really have to give all the credit to Brett Favre because I just sort of fell into a good situation. And
nice.
No, the genesis of the book was back in 2005. And I was really just reading other books. I read David Marinus's book about Lombardi, and then I read Dave Zimmerman's book about Lambeau, and then lastly I read a book before they were Packers by Dennis Gullickson, and I just got deeper and deeper. I moved from the Lombardi era backwards, and you know I thought I knew a little bit about Packers history, but then as I read those books, I got really, really fascinated by it. So then I started to get every book I could on the Packers, and you know soon enough I was trying to locate places in Green Bay that had been mentioned in several of these books, and I started to take photos of these places and And then I wanted to see if I could locate old photos and stand them side by side, and then it just sort of went from there.
So was that the idea of putting the modern photos with the photos from the period? Because I got to say, that is one of the most striking aspects of the book. When you look at spots as they were then and then as they are now, it's very powerful.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, one of the places that really struck me was the cathedral downtown, in St. Francis Xavier Cathedral in downtown Green Bay, because as I researched the early days of the Packers, I know the Packers had two meetings at the Press Gazette. I think it was the 11th and the 14th. And sometime right around there, I believe it was the 16th of August, 1919, right at the same time the Packers were getting started, Curley got married to his first wife, Marguerite Van Kessel, in that cathedral. And I didn't know where any of these locations were or what these buildings were, but I started searching around downtown, and the cathedral's pretty easy to spot. And it really just sort of struck me that here's this building that has been here since the 1800s, and Curley Lambeau got married inside this building, and it's still there, and I'm sitting here looking at it. And that was probably the first building that I really got fascinated with, and it got me started.
Tell me how you got all the way back to Fred Hulbert. To me, this is one of the most amazing things in the book is, most Packer fans are familiar with the traditional story of the team starting at the Green Bay Press Gazette with Curley Lambeau and Calhoun and, the whole history of the team. But when you take it back to Hulbert, that is amazing. Mm-hmm. It's really amazing. What set you on that journey and what did you find out about him?
Well, I have to give the research, the original research credit, I have to give to Dennis Gullickson and Carl Hampson, who wrote this book called Before They Were Packers, because they really did a tremendous amount of original research, and they spent, I think, about a decade traveling around the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, around Wisconsin, just learning about these teams that the Packers played, back in the in 1919, and then the city teams prior to the Packers, because I guess, and it shouldn't have been a surprise to me, but the Packers just didn't spontaneously arise out of nothing. I mean, there was an environment that was going on in Green Bay that caused this team to arise. Now, the story thickens as time goes by because of the survival against all odds of the team, but really the football started in 1895 with this guy, Fred Hulbert, that I think he was originally from Racine, and he went to a school in Beaver Dam, Wisconsin, and then in 1895 he ended up coming up to Green Bay, and he moved into this place called the Broadway, I think it was the Broadway House at the time, because a lot of these hotels were referred to as houses. And he took a job in the Larson Canning Factory, which is right over by Titletown Brewery. I think they're remodeling those into condos or something now. But he got appointed as the athletic trainer for the YMCA on the West Side, which I think was called the West Side Athletic Association. And he had knowledge of this game because he'd played football in Beaver Dam, and so he started to recruit some of the kids who were frequenting the West Side Athletic Association and teaching them a game of football. So they'd practice over there. They practiced out back of the Dousman Street School, which is Fort Howard Elementary now, and then they practiced in the what they called the Cow Pasture, which is Seymour Park, and they practiced around town, and of course the city looked a lot different back then, but they practiced in open fields and parks, and pretty soon, I think it was in September, I think on the 21st, 1895, they actually had their first official football game over on the Washington Park grounds where basically where Joannie's Park is right now, or, close to right where the school is, East High School. And they arranged it between the alumni and students of East and West High Schools and turned into like an 8-8 tie. But that was the beginning of the team, the town team era in 1895, and Fred Hulbert was the guy who brought it there. And then he went on to become an executive with the Larson Canning Company, and he remained in Green Bay till about 1905, I think, and then he moved, and we kind of lose his trail after that. But he was the guy that brought it.
Was there anything while you were writing and researching for the book, was there anything that surprised you? I mean, like you said, you the genesis came from reading other books, and there's lots of stuff that's been told and lots of stories. And you guys go into great detail about things like Don Hutson and Lombardi and training camp under Lombardi and things like that.
Yeah.
Was there anything that surprised you that you weren't expecting, that kind of jumped out at you, like, that's not what I thought it would be like at all?
Well, I guess as far as surprises, probably the thing that I took away from the research that I did when I wrote the book was just how involved the community was. Because, you know, people say that, you get the announcers on game day, they talk about, you know, community owned and the Packers and the town are one and the same, but nobody ever really gives any details about it. But as you go through these stock sales, you know, the first of which was in 1923, and then they had one in 35, et cetera. But each one of these wasn't anything, those weren't situations that the Packers really wanted to be in. Those were of complete and total necessity, you know, and had they not done them, the team would have disappeared. But there were certain individuals, you know, certain names are remembered as community leaders, but there were a lot of people in the community that came together on these stock sales. You know, you've got the Hungry Five, a guy like Andy Turnbull and Lee Joannis and W.W. Kelly and Jerry Clifford and George Calhoun and Curly and these guys. But it was really amazing how the community pulled together and raised money in unique and creative ways to keep the team afloat financially when they should have been out of the league on any number of occasions. It's really a David versus Goliath story. You know, that's what's so amazing about it. And the book, hopefully for people, brings out the specific details of that and the places that these events happened, and also the context of American history in which they happened.
So going forward with, you know, into the modern era, so to speak, you kind of have it on at the end of the book. It was striking to me how you go through this long history, and you kind of taught this as a kid when you're in school about the history of the world, about how the world's been here X number of years and we're just kind of a dot on the timeline, and about how, you know, everything that's happened from Holmgren to Sherman to Rhodes to McCarthy, you know, everything along that line is so not infinitesimal, not dismissively so, but it is just a small part.
It's just a chapter
in the history of the Packers. Was there any time when you were writing the book where you thought, wow, this is the most important part of the Packers' history, like this moment, like this, you know, this either this era or this year, or was it just not as defined as that?
No, to me there was one seminal moment that really implied change for the team, and that was the year 1950 when the Curly Lambeau era ended. It started in 1950. He walked away from the team in late January, and they were in big debt, and they needed to have another stock sale, but they were venturing into the unknown because the old days were fantastic, but you know, American history and life was seemingly a lot simpler then. But by the time they moved into the 50s, it was a big time of transition, not only in Green Bay but in the country. You know, you had the civil rights movement kicking off. You had Jackie Robinson coming into the league. You had Bob Mann. But really, to me, the biggest event, the biggest turning point in Packers history where there's a pivot is the building of Lambeau Field, which was called New City Stadium back there in 57 when they opened it. And to me, that was the key point in time, which was the transition from the old to the new.
I know most people have the perception, and you talked about the announcers on TV every Sunday, yada, yada, yada. Most people have the perception that everyone in Green Bay loves the Packers, and there's nothing that the city and the state wouldn't do for them.
Yeah.
And I think watching how hard Bob Harlan had to work to get Lambeau Field renovated, you know, tells you the truth in regards to that idea. Did you find any?
Oh, absolutely.
Did you find any kind of like put? Not, I don't know. Not opposition or. But did you find any pushback, resentment, anything with some of the people maybe you came in contact with while you were researching the book? Because you touch on so many different aspects of life in Green Bay. I got to imagine that at some point you ran across somebody who said, I don't care about the Packers or what have you.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, there's people that don't care for the Packers, but they're definitely in the minority in Green Bay and Brown County. But really, the burden fell on the citizens of Brown County and the people of Green Bay, because you read that chapter on Bob Harlan, and you realize what about a 9-month journey, just a saga the guy went through, just trying to get support to build the stadium, because they were in the throes of the Miller Park thing, and I don't know, you guys are from Wisconsin, and they're really into these recall elections up there. And I know there was a state nice. Senator that got recalled after the Miller Park thing, so, I mean, the shadow of Miller Park really sort of hung over the Lambeau Field efforts. But, yeah, listening to Bob Harlan, and when we interviewed him, it was really fascinating. And I got to take a little aside, because we interviewed him on that Saturday before the Packers-Vikings game when Favre came to town. The last day, and remember, we just lost two overtime games to Miami and Washington.
Oh yeah,
and then Cullen Jenkins got scratched before the game. I think they had three defensive linemen
for the game. I was at that game. Yeah,
yeah, it looked real grim. But you know, the day before we'd interviewed Harlan, and he told us, he unwound this entire political saga. And one of the interesting things he did towards the end of the interview, he was talking about the stock sale in '97 and how he was really thinking that it was going to get shot down because there were some of the owners, I presume younger, newer owners, that were adamantly opposed because he thought they were going to use the money to better themselves on the field, when really, Bob, he wanted to raise the money for the stadium effort because he saw the writing on the wall with how the Packers were falling behind financially. But anyway, to get back to the point, he said the guy that stuck up for him in the league meeting in Washington, D.C. was Dan Rooney. He said, you know, gentlemen, I think the Packers are incredibly important to this league, and we need to give them our full support. And they got a unanimous vote. And then the thing that struck me was at the end of the interview, he said, you know, Dan and I have gotten together over the years, and we've always talked. He said, we never got it done, but we always talked about how great it would be to have a Packers-Steelers Super Bowl. And I just thought that was, you know, that statement, in, I think it was in October that he made, and then to have a Packers-Steelers Super Bowl that, you know, that February was amazing.
Yeah, the only thing better than having it was winning it.
Absolutely, yeah. If we'd have lost, I don't know, that probably wouldn't have been I probably wouldn't even have put that in the book.
Well, I'll tell you something. Corey and I both met Mr. Harlan for the first time.
Oh yeah.
During the playoff run, and it was by far the highlight of the entire playoff experience.
My Aunt Nancy talked to him for 2 hours at a supermarket at a book signing near Appleton, and
he's really passionate about the Packers. I mean, let me ask you this. Could you, I know what I felt when I talked to him, but could you feel the energy coming off of him?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. That's my point. It's like I think a lot of fans don't understand how integral he is to everything that's happening now. He may not.
Oh, absolutely.
He's not involved, obviously, in the day-to-day operations of the team. But he is absolutely the architect of everything that's happening in Green Bay today.
Yeah, 100%.
Oh, doubtless, yeah. It all starts at the top, you know, and they had Judge Robert Perrins for all those years. And, you know, they had they just didn't have a great situation. They still had interference from the executive committee and whatnot. But when they put Harlan in charge, the first thing he does is go get Ron Wolf. And then Wolf gets Harlan, and then they go after Favre and Reggie White. And He built the basis for our management team, which is transferred now into Thompson and McCarthy. But the most important thing for any football organization is the synergy at the top. And I'll tell you, the Packers now, and this is really thanks to Harlan. He's the origin of this. But the way that McCarthy and Ted Thompson get along, you know, from what I'm told, and the way the scouting department gets along, you know, Ted doesn't do it in a vacuum. And there was a nice article on the scouting department a few months ago, I think in the Press Gazette or the Journal Sentinel, but a lot of these guys have been together for 15 years, and all the scouts get along. They all go to dinner together, and that's the secret to our success. I mean, is we've got an incredible general manager, and we've got an incredible scouting staff and negotiator. This whole organization from the top down is excellent. And Harlan is the guy. You know, he's the one that got it started, and he's the one that got he recognized that they had a problem with John Jones, and was you know, wise enough to stand up and say, hey, I made a mistake, and then start another search. And now, from what I understand, Mark Murphy is a pretty excellent president as well. So, yeah, Harlan is the whole reason, really, where we are, why we are where we are.
Absolutely. James Hurley, James Hurley, co-author of Green Bay, A City and Its Team. Dr. Hurley, thank you so much for joining us tonight and sharing your insights and everything you learned while writing the book.
Sure. Now, let me talk about real quick. People can get the book on our website, www.acityanditsteam.com. We're on Amazon online, and we're just getting into Barnes & Noble in the Milwaukee area, and we're in pretty much all the bookstores and the pro shop in Green Bay. But the website, acityanditsteam.com, or come visit us on our Facebook page. Just type in Green Bay, A City and Its Team. So, hey, I appreciate you guys, and I love Cheesehead TV, and that's a really neat thing you guys are doing.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for coming on. We'll talk to you soon.
We're going to have the link on the live
pod. Appreciate it. Okay, thanks, guys.
Have a great night.
You too. Bye.
James Hurley, A City and Its Team, Green Bay. It is. I'm serious, people. Check it out. I cannot recommend it enough. It is.
It's really good.
Flipping fantastic.
It's really big. The pictures are like amazing.
Pictures are amazing. And seriously, what I said is the pictures of what places look like then, what places look like now.
Yeah.
The juxtaposition is very powerful. It's everything about it is fantastic.
I mean, I'm a little biased.
No. You?
I mean, I was born there, so it's like, that's my book right there.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
What can I say?
But it's true. If you read about it, and it just all the way back to, like, you know, the late 1800s.
Yeah, I love 1895. That's the genesis of it. I love that 1895, no matter what the NFL or the Packers want to say, the distillation of the seed.
1895.
The distillation of the seed. 1895.
1890, mother.
Come on.
Come on now.
That's awesome.
It's beyond that's awesome.
I can't say it.
Oh, look at Jason Wilde. He's prepping people for his appearance.
Yeah, he's like, hey, everybody.
Joining Cheesehead TV, as I'm sure it'll be a topic, here's my driver story.
Here's my story. You
just
need
for
to
that,
read.
Let's not ask him about it at all. Let's talk about everything but. Oh, my God. Should we take an early break and then come back and talk to Jason?
What about our videos?
Our videos! Well, the videos are really just my excuse to talk about how awesome Aaron Rodgers is.
I like that.
Nothing wrong with that. If you roll the first one, this is the James Jones touchdown, 70 yards. I know a lot of people are very nervous about the prospect of starting either Marshall Newhouse or Derek Sherrod. I think Bulaga is back this week. We'll talk to Jason about that on the flip side here. I think Bulaga is back this week. We'll talk to Jason about whether he should be back on the right or left side. But the biggest thing Packer fans are worried about... Wait, go back to the...
Oh, sorry.
The biggest thing we've seen on the blog this week is people worried about teams attacking the inexperienced tackles on the right side. What if they bring blitzes? What if they attack? Well, I'm here to tell you, people, the Falcons tried it. The Falcons tried to go right at Sherrod, and the Packers were ready, and that was the touchdown. Big blitz, slot blitz from the right side of the offense, touchdown. They blitzed the corner. The safety picked up Jones. Jones cut inside on basically a fly pattern, kind of a post, touchdown. So I'm not worried. It's Aaron Rodgers, people.
Oh, speaking of Aaron Rodgers,
who makes this throw? Now, look at this. This is from, I think, the first quarter of the game. Greg Jennings in the slot, slides all the way across the field. Rodgers rolls right. As he's rolling, hits Jennings in stride, perfectly in stride, down to, like, the 3 or 4 yard line. This is a ridiculous throw that nobody in the NFL should be able to make. But Aaron Rodgers makes it like it's nothing. It's nothing. Like, he's
that makes me
and
happy.
Just boom. That's Madden right there. That's a throw on Madden where you're like,
Madden.
Do it. No, we could do that in real life. No, Aaron Rodgers can do it in real life.
It's true.
And it's ridiculous.
I mean, that's the whole, okay, and I know you're going to laugh, but the whole dinking and dunking.
It's dinking and dunking, baby.
Okay. In Madden, if you can dink and dunk, you cannot be beat. That's all I have to say. Well,
this is spoken
right
by someone who hasn't played Madden in like 4 years, but he is correct.
Yeah, is it?
You're
is
correct.
It true?
I'm not denying
go.
It.
There
You're
you
absolutely
go.
Absolutely right. You're absolutely right. But Rodgers and the play action game. I wrote about it this week on CheeseheadTV.com. Shameless plug. The play action game is ridiculous. Rodgers, yeah, time and again,
psych,
put the ball out there for the back, whipping his head up, finding the receiver, reading the coverage, throwing a laser. The best example, obviously, is the Jennings touchdown, where Jennings is doing a dig pattern into the middle of the field. Rodgers, play action, whips his head up, finds the coverage, throws the ball. Jennings makes everything happen in space after that.
I like that.
It's, but I like people, it. I just don't think people understand how difficult that is. And Rodgers makes it look so easy to execute the fake, whip your head up, find the coverage, throw the ball. Like, it looks like Rodgers is, like, predetermined, I'm going to throw this no matter what. I guarantee you that's not the case. He's executing the fake, looking up, looking at his receiver, looking at the coverage, and diagnosing within a split second, yes, I got it. A lot of quarterbacks, you'll see, execute the fake, whip my head up, do I have it? I'm not sure if I have it. And then by then, they're done. It's over. The game, the play is busted, and they got to run, they got to pull it down,
yep,
throw the check down, whatever. Aaron is just on another level right now. Another level. And we'd be remiss if we didn't say a big reason he's on another level right now is because of Mike McCarthy. Mike McCarthy's offense.
Oh, yeah.
And Mike McCarthy's handling of Rodgers, yeah, is just,
that's
is
the thing,
unbelievable.
This is the thing, though. It's like a school. It's like Mike McCarthy's like, here is my strategy. Here's what I'm going to do. And then he delivers that thing. And people are like, they complain about it. It's annoying.
Well, fans are fans. You and I are fans. We complain about our own things, and people call us out on them.
Da, 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 da.
That's what you do.
The only thing people complain about me, Packer fans complain that I'm, like, all up in Tremont. Like, I won't say anything bad about Tremont, apparently.
Well, will you?
No.
No. So they are correct in what they're calling you out on.
But they get all sensitive.
Yeah,
like, I stick up for Tremont.
We had some sensitive comments this week on the site.
I'm like, dude, it's okay. Tremont's not doing that well right now, but.
Okay, here, Brewers fans, please join us because your team's getting shellacked, and I notice on Twitter that most of you are praying for a rainout. So we're here. We're talking about your Super Bowl champion 5-0 Packers.
And we have Jason Wilde coming back on the break.
Jason Wilde on the other side of this break is going to join us.
That's good stuff.
Talk
right
about all things Green Bay Packers. We're going to take a break. Here at CheeseheadTV.com.
Jason Wilde is the first person that we've talked to that actually gets to talk to Aaron Rodgers on a consistent basis.
It's true. So here we go. We're going to ask him nothing about Aaron Rodgers and nothing about Donald Driver and Mike McCarthy.
Awesome.
Should be an interesting segment. Ladies and gentlemen, we are back here at Packer Transplants Live, CheeseheadTV.com, with our special guest,
Jason Wilde
from ESPN Milwaukee.
Oh, man.
ESPN Madison.
A man who gets to talk to Aaron Rodgers once a week, if not more.
How are you tonight, Jason?
I'm good, guys. Thanks for having me on. I feel like it's an honor to close out the old studio. I don't know if this is the equivalent of Brett Favre running without any timeouts toward the end zone against the Falcons, but I will do my best to deliver the way he did.
Let me tell you, that's exactly what this is. That is the perfect analogy.
Exactly.
Except you're not going to knock down the studio like they knocked down County Stadium.
No.
Pretty close, though. So Jason, let's talk about your good friend Mike McCarthy.
Yes.
So
let's talk about it.
What happened? You know, I just want to say, next time you're going to piss off Coach, could you do it on a day when Packers.com is streaming? Seriously. I mean.
Really? They weren't streaming today?
Not today, no. Like, the one day. Wow. I'm fine. I have no problem with the question. I have no problem with anything. But just do it when they're streaming.
Yeah,
that's all
yeah,
I ask.
Definitely.
I want to see
it. If I would have known, I would have.
You would have saved it, right?
I would have taken video myself, posted it on Twitter.
That's what I'm talking about. All right, so for those two or three listeners, viewers who may not know, Mike McCarthy got very animated this afternoon when asked by our good friend Jason here about the limited number of touches slash snaps taken by our good friend Donald Driver on Sunday night in the game against Atlanta. And Mike proceeded to get rather upset. Jason, why don't you take us through what happened from your vantage point?
Yeah, well, first of all, the issue that I asked about, I was very clear because as I write in the story, which I hope folks have read, well, before I say anything else, let me preface this by saying that I understand the sensitivity of the Donald Driver subject. He is an incredibly beloved player. He has given his blood, sweat, tears, injuries to the Green Bay Packers for the last 13 years. He has been an incredible player, a self-made seventh-round pick in 1999 who has become the franchise's all-time leading receiver. So I understand the sensitivity of the subject. But my question was specifically about his reduced number of snaps over the past month. He had 44 snaps in the opener. He played 24 snaps against the Falcons. And there's a big difference, in my opinion, between targets or catches and snaps because, as we have heard many times, both the quarterback and the defense, which Mike McCarthy likes to point out repeatedly, dictates how many passes each player catches generally. The coverage will dictate who gets the ball, who's open. Well, the coach dictates who's on the field, and he has dictated that 36-year-old Donald Driver has played fewer and fewer snaps as the season has gone on. And down the stretch, something that I am now realizing I neglected to mention in my story that I just posted, Donald Driver played 6 snaps out of the final 15 snaps on Sunday night against the Falcons. He played 3 snaps on the touchdown drive. He played 3 snaps on a field goal drive, including the one that was wiped out by the timeout that shouldn't have been awarded, and 0 snaps on the final possession. I think that that's a valid story, that the all-time leading receiver in franchise history, there is so much depth at receiver that he is, for lack of a better term, being phased out of the offense, or at the very least is playing less than a bunch of other guys and slightly more than a rookie second-round pick. So I felt like it was a worthwhile question. I think Mike was not in a great mood today. He, if you listen to the entire press conference, earlier on he's talking about practice, and he says that the tempo was good, but he wasn't happy with it
right, in
terms of the number of mistakes and pre-snap penalties. I also think that he's well aware of how much his players will read about this or hear about this, and they're playing an 0-4 team that he can tell all his players repeatedly that it's coming off a bye and they're going to have a bunch of unscouted looks. But I think he wanted to make clear that he's fired up for this week. So I think I have no problem with that. I will say that he and I exchanged text messages after the fact. I won't talk too much about what was in those other than I think he and I are fine. I think he understands why the question had to be asked, and he can read the story tomorrow, and if, as I told him, if he has an issue with it, my door is always open. I'm more than willing to discuss it with him.
That's what we like. See, Jason, you come on here and you just lay it out like it is. I mean, that's great. I mean, that's what
Pete Doherty and I went and talked to Donald, and then a whole group descended, and then we kind of let the group go away, and we asked a few more questions of him. And, you know, Donald Driver says that he did not talk to Mike McCarthy, and he did not talk to Aaron Rodgers about his role in the offense currently. That is what he said on the record.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I take Donald at his word. If that's what he says, then he must not have talked to Aaron Rodgers or Mike McCarthy about not being happy with the role he has in the offense.
Okay, let's get off of this for a second.
Okay.
We'll probably come back to it because it's inevitable, because it's awesome. Because it's like the most emotion McCarthy's ever shown at the podium. And of course, they're not freaking streaming it. But.
No, apparently they were streaming it, but.
Oh. Everybody just missed it then.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but sticking with the offense and talking about Brian Bulaga's chances for playing on Sunday, I know you talked to Brian in the locker room last week, this week. I know he wants to play. I know he was, quote-unquote, limited in practice today. Is it your opinion? Do you think they should put him on the field on Sunday with the idea that, you know, it's the Rams. They're 0-4. Yes, they've got a chance, as I said in the opening segment.
They don't
Corey
have a
disagrees
chance.
With me that they have no
Sorry.
Chance. I say they have a small chance. Do you just let him sit for another week because, heck, it's the Rams. They're terrible, and you can try and get Sherrod some more time? Or do you play him if he wants to play?
Well, that's a good question because you guys know my personality, I think, from Twitter and from our conversations. I am not inherently a risk taker. I am a play it safe kind of guy. And I would think that you could get through this game and give him another week to heal some more without having to play him. Now, I suppose there's a flip side to playing it safe, which is you may want to play your two best tackles that you have that are healthy or healthy enough to play, if in Bulaga's case, because it only takes one play for your star quarterback who is on track to be the MVP this season to be hit in a compromising position and injured. So I kind of see both sides of the argument. Brian Bulaga has thought that he could play the last 2 weeks. He would play with a brace. Mike McCarthy, also another one of his topics that he was less than thrilled to discuss, something which I may have shined a bright light on, is that he doesn't want to say how he's going to deploy any of those tackles who may or may not play. Right. Rob Domofsky had asked if Bulaga split his snaps between left and right tackle, and Mike kind of avoided the question. I said, are you not telling us because you don't want the Rams to know, basically? And that's what he said. So, which is fine. That's game planning stuff. I don't have a problem with him not telling us that. I really don't. So, if that contributed to his mood later, I guess on me. But I guess my inclination, if you required me to make a decision, I would say I would rather sit Brian Bulaga for another week and have him ready for the Metrodome, where the Vikings may not be the Vikings that we're come to know and love, but they still are pretty good at home, and that defense certainly gets off the ball pretty quickly at home.
I couldn't agree more. I'm totally in that camp. Sticking on Bulaga for a second, because I don't know, this kind of came to me today, and I don't know if I'm totally out in left field here or if I'm maybe, I don't know, have something here, but do you think the Packers...
You're either out of left field or a brilliant genius.
It's certainly not the second. Do you think the Packers protect certain players in regards to rushing them back or not? Just because I look at something like Bulaga and him saying, and he's said to a couple different people, I'm fine, I'm ready to play, I want to play. Well, that got Atari Bigby back on the field a couple of years ago, even though he was hurt. Do you think
not that we were told how hurt he was?
No, but that exactly. And I know they've been, you know, forthcoming, so to speak, about Clay Matthews being injured. You know, Mike saying last week that he's not going to practice for the foreseeable future, whatever that means. But do you think there's a bit of favoritism there, or is it just, am I just reading too much into that?
I don't know if I would call it favoritism. I think, how would I put this? I think when it's a player who is a core player who is going to be a cornerstone for the franchise for a long time, which Brian Bulaga clearly is. I mean, right. I would say that their intent is for whatever the combination is, him and Sherrod, and now, you know, Marshall Newhouse turning out to be better than a fifth-round pick would seem to be.
Boy, howdy.
Their intent is to have those guys be the new Tauscher and Clifton. And do you really want to risk further damaging a player's or exacerbating an injury by rushing him back when he's a guy that you're going to be counting on for the next, hopefully, decade? I think that may be a component there. It's interesting, though, that you bring up guys like Atari Bigby, who, you know, obviously turned out to be somewhat disposable or expendable, and maybe they felt like it wasn't quite as much of a risk. I think it's interesting that some guys, are allowed to say, hey, I'm playing, and other guys,
right,
the doctors basically overrule them. And yes, because we don't have all the information, it's hard to say how that decision is reached.
Looking at flipping the script, as our good friend Sal Palantonio likes to say, to the defensive side of the ball, did we see the emergence of the defense through the final three quarters of that game on Sunday? Or do the Packers just match up well with the Falcons and they still have issues?
I hope that it's the former, because I was going to write a story about that this week, about how that could be the turning point for them. So I talked with Dom Capers about that on Monday. I talked with BJ Raji about it today. Obviously, there are other stories for today that have to be written, but that is my story for later in the week. And I guess we'll know more as we watch the next two games kind of play out. But I guess my thought is they struggled for four games, and the first two drives of the Atlanta game. The next seven drives in the Atlanta game, they were lights out. They're playing a team that clearly is struggling with its offensive identity under the former wunderkind Josh McDaniels and a former first number one overall pick in Sam Bradford. So it's an offense that would appear to be ripe for being shut down and kind of increasing the momentum. And then you go to Minnesota, where obviously Adrian Peterson is a fantastic player, one of the best players in the league, but Donovan McNabb hasn't exactly been lights out with his new team. So there's the possibility of another strong defensive performance at the Metrodome. And suddenly now you're talking about stringing together 11 good quarters of football, potentially, going into the bye with, you know, one of the best offenses in the league waiting for you on the other side of the bye with the San Diego Chargers. So I think Packers fans and I think defensive players are hoping that that's the start of them playing more like the Packers defense that ranked in the top five each of the past 2 years, which hadn't happened since the Lombardi years. I did talk to BJ Raji about it. I said, do you believe in momentum from game to game? Because I think momentum is definitely something that happens within a game.
Right.
I'm not sure that with 6 days in between games, there's actually something that carries over from game to game. But
totally. In agreement there.
If it happens that they play well on Sunday defensively against the Rams, is that the momentum built from last week? Who am I to say? All I know is that it would be great for Packers fans and for the Packers defense to put together seven quarters in a row of really good play.
Was it as noticeable live as it was on TV just how dirty the Falcons are?
No, I think, you know, especially with a night game, and even though I'm not at a newspaper, I still try to, you know, I end up posting stories at 4:30 in the morning Eastern after night games. I try to, you know, I'm taking notes, and for instance, I didn't really see the first hit that was on Hawk. I saw his retaliation. I was kind of like a referee on that. And then I saw the replay, and obviously that was something that was initiated by a Falcons player. Just watching the game on television after I got home on Monday, no, I don't think it's as evident from the press box as it is, because especially on a Sunday night game, I mean, the camera angles are great, and you get to see a lot more of the extracurricular stuff. But the other thing I talked about with BJ today was what he had said, and I know he got a talking to from McCarthy. Now, it wasn't quite the one that I got today. He said he wasn't pissed. But at the same time, I mean, you know, BJ acknowledged that while he stands by everything he said and everything is 100% true, he probably shouldn't have said it all. And I think that that's the heat of the moment. When you feel like guys are cheap-shotting you and you feel like guys play dirty, then – and there's a difference between chop blocking and, you know, zone blocking schemes and cutting a guy and playing dirty. And I would say that it would appear that the Falcons toe that line and often cross it.
I couldn't agree more. The thing that to me was –
You're trying to scare me because we've agreed pretty much the entire show.
Oh, there's a lot of ball game left, Jason. A lot of ball game left.
Indeed, one of your signature phrases.
But, you know, just, there were a lot of, like, blatant shots to the head. Like, Dunter Robinson at one point Literally, like Donald Driver is wrapped up and takes his head down and goes for his head. And there's a couple other. Jermichael Finley got one to the head. Like, the guys were literally going for Packer players' heads. And that, to me,
Robinson's just a bad guy. I mean,
yes,
he's just.
I agree.
He's just a. He reminds me of who is that? Was it Mark Carrier who played for the Lions and and was a notorious headhunter back in the day before the NFL got had its come to Jesus moment and stopped showing his hits as like big hits,
a highlight,
promoting them on their DVD sales.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. You know, he was one of those guys, and I think Robinson falls in that category. I remember being in my hotel room in, must have been Carolina, and watching, was that when Atlanta played the Eagles?
No, I was going to say the Falcons and the Eagles and the Jackson light up last year.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and then they showed what he did the previous year. I mean, I would say that that's pretty clearly a trend with him, that he is a dirty player who apparently doesn't care about losing money, whereas our friend Jared Bush is upset about losing $5,000 for not having his chin strap buckled a couple weeks ago.
Which, you know, that's ridiculous.
That's a lot of money when you're Jarrett Bush.
By the way, people, speaking of Jarrett Bush, read Tuesdays with Wildy, Jarrett Bush edition this week over there on ESPN Milwaukee. Great stuff, Jason.
Appreciate the plug. That was very nice of you.
It's what I do, man. It's what
we do best.
We got nothing else. We have no original content here at Cheesehead TV. We're simply aggregators.
Come on now. That's definitely not true.
Okay, so now here's brass tacks. Does Aaron Rodgers know we exist? Seriously.
Does he know? Well, yeah, didn't he call you the crazy Packer guy?
But crazy Packer dude. All right.
Crazy Packer dude.
Now, there's a difference between calling some guy on Twitter crazy Packer dude and knowing CheeseheadTV.com is a website.
I would say that Aaron Rodgers is the most self-aware athlete that I know. Now, I also know him better than probably any athlete I've covered. And I didn't know until late in Favre's career how much Favre read every single word that was written about him and how he used the computer terminal in the players' lounge more than any other player to read everything that was being written about him, which I thought was interesting. Hmm. Which, you know, it was nice of him to get out of his private locker room to go into the players' lounge and read that stuff.
Hey, now!
but, yeah, I'm sure Aaron Rodgers knows you exist. Does he have any plans on joining
the show? Stop
right.
No, stop. Stop. That's all I need.
That's all we need.
That's it. That's it.
Okay.
That's all we need. That's it.
Unless he has, like, a nugget, but as long as he knows we exist, so
that's
fine.
It. That's heaven right there. speaking of heaven and Aaron Rodgers, MVP, I mean, walk-off at this point, I mean, you got to think, the only thing that derails this kid from MVP of the NFL this year is an injury. I mean, the guy is just absolutely lights out. And there's no doubt there, right? I mean, who touches him other than maybe Tom Brady?
No.
Yeah, he's been terrific. I think it's always dangerous to try and project things after five games just because, to borrow a phrase of a good friend of mine, there's a whole lot of season left. but... if I was voting today, which I don't vote, Tom Silverstein has the vote in Green Bay, but if I was voting today, yeah, I would say that he's pretty clearly the most valuable player. He plays on one of the two undefeated teams in the league. He's put up astronomical numbers. He's been phenomenal. He's done things that have never been done in league history between his passer rating the first 5 weeks and the productivity he had with the four touchdown passes, two touchdown runs, and 400 yards of passing the other day. So, yeah, at this point, but, you know, 11 more regular season games to go. He has to stay healthy, and he has to do it without Chad Clifton for the foreseeable future.
Do you think Clifton's done for the year?
I'm just saying.
I mean, is that your hunch?
I'm basing that purely on an educated guess and knowing Chad fairly well. I don't think so. I think it could be after the bye. It could be well after the bye. It could be for the stretch run. But if they can avoid a ton more injuries, if they don't have the same experience that they had last year, and it's, you know, losing Nick Collins for the year and now Chad for the foreseeable future, if they can avoid any more of those, and they can carry him as an inactive on game day for several weeks, I think there's a chance he'll be back. I would love to talk to Chad about it, and if I get a chance to, I will.
We know what a huge fan of the media Chad is.
Yeah.
You know, he's great with us. He just doesn't like the big crowds. And
right.
If you request him,
he was great. Hey, he was great on your show this summer. He came on with you and Bill, right?
Yeah, he's, you know, I really like him. The thing about him is he doesn't need it. You know, there are guys that really like it, and then there are guys that really don't have any use for it, and he's in the latter camp. But when he talks to you, he's, you know, he's a very interesting, and he can be very introspective when he wants to be. It's just the storyline with him, you know, he's just so solid. It's the same storyline all the time.
Right.
Coming back from the 2002 hip injury, the big Lamborghini joke that Mark Tauscher used to make about him, and managing his old age by limiting his practice reps. I mean, it's really, you know, because when he plays, if he's healthy, he plays great. I mean, he may not be the greatest left tackle in NFL history, but he's been pretty darn good.
But that's the thing. Like, the guy has protected the blind side of Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers and done it phenomenally well for both of their offenses to put up monster numbers. There are a couple of people in the national press, Pete Prisco being one of them, who, like, oh, Chad Clifton is overrated. Like, I don't understand that talk. I mean, he's not the world's greatest run blocker, but he's lights out when it comes to protecting your quarterback's blind side. In today's NFL, what else is there?
And what does that mean, he's overrated? The guy's only been to two Pro Bowls. I mean,
exactly.
How is he overrated?
If anything, he's
underrated. I can see if he's been to eight Pro Bowls and is getting by on his name from earlier in his career, but I just don't think that's the case.
I couldn't agree more. Jason, this has been completely disappointing. We've agreed on everything.
What about Throwback Weekend, Jason? This weekend.
Public pressure.
It's funny, Paula had asked me, so you're talking to your Cheesehead TV guys tonight? I said yes. She said, well, what's this Throwback Weekend business? I definitely want to keep the hashtag as Throwback Weekend and not turn it into some variation on last year's hashtag, Throwback Wildy, perhaps. But there's not, you know, other than our girls' sleep patterns, there's not a whole lot of excuse. The Abbey is not that far away. So I would say that I can't guarantee you a lengthy appearance, but it would be my genuine hope to make an appearance.
Wow.
Maybe Domofsky and I can carpool.
Well, as a father of three, and for that reason being the reason I won't be there, I totally understand.
I have
you're not,
no idea how you and Carolyn do it.
It's crazy, dude.
Honest.
I'm telling you.
Like when the three of them were smaller, I don't know the entire history of Cheesehead TV. The book has not been written yet.
Someday
about it, but I'm guessing that it wasn't what it is now when they were three small people. So
yeah, it's. It's a chore, but it's one I love. It's a labor of love. So, Jason, we hope to see you through Throwback Weekend. Thank you so much for coming on tonight. We'll definitely be checking out your stuff at ESPN Milwaukee, ESPN Madison, ESPN Wisconsin, and, of course, Green and Gold Today, and with Homer.
And the Aaron Rodgers Show.
And the Aaron Rodgers Show.
Hello.
Jason, you're an absolute legend for joining us tonight. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, guys. We will see you Saturday night, hopefully.
Jason Wilde, ESPN Milwaukee. There he was. There he is. The legend.
The man himself.
The man.
The man with the coolest office I've ever seen in Lambeau.
Corey cares nothing about anything having to do with Jason Wilde except for his office.
No, that's not true. I love me some Jason Wilde. I just think it's
really
cool.
This is always
cool
the thing you go back to.
That's
your touchstone.
He has a cool office in Lambeau. Come on.
Oh.
Yeah, it doesn't get any better than that.
That is great. And look at that. It's almost time to wrap it up. What do you think about that, Corey Behnke? Last show ever in our Inwood studios here at Cheesehead TV.
Oh, yeah. Cheesehead TV. It's going to go south before we go to Green Bay.
Can I just say, if you go back in the archives, ladies and gentlemen, if you go back, set the Wayback Machine.
Nobody's going to do that.
For the very first Packer transplants. I mean, the very first ever recorded.
But that was just a podcast.
Just a podcast. Number one. 20 minutes long podcast of Packer Transplants.
22 minutes.
It was preseason, the summer before the 2007 season.
Man.
Corey Banky.
Hey, Aaron,
here.
Let's do a podcast.
Hey, Aaron, let's do a podcast. Aaron, what's a podcast? Corey, in that first inaugural episode, yeah. In the first 5 minutes, I think it's the first minute of the podcast, Corey identifies Ahmad Carroll as a current member of the Green Bay Packers, which he was not. He was long gone by that point. And I remember specifically at that time, Corey and I looking at each other frozen in fear. Like, do we stop? Do we go? Do we acknowledge that? Do we care? No, we didn't. It was there. We just kept going. It didn't matter. And from that moment on, that set the tone, as the parlance of football, set the tone for Packer transplants. And it's been that way ever since. Warts and all, we are here for you, Green Bay Packer fans around the world. This is what we do. We talk Packers. We talk all sorts of Packers. Look at tonight. We've talked about everything.
We talked about
1895.
Green
City
Bay Packers.
Team Green Bay.
Green Bay.
Football. All the way up to today's blow up with Mike McCarthy talking about Donald Driver's lack of snaps on Sunday and his reduced role in the offense and everything in between. This is what we do. We're here for you, people. Packers all the time. Packer transplants. CheeseheadTV.com. That's what we do. Thank you so much for joining
Throwback
us.
Throwback weekend, people.
Throwback weekend.
Throwback
up.
Weekend. How many people are on the spreadsheet right now?
There were like 40 or 50.
It's like 50, I think. Throw back the weekend. Bring it. Bring your A game. Because we're going to have some Cheesehead TV magnets. We're going to have a couple Cheesehead TV footballs. Posters. T-shirts. Brian Caribou, bring in the T-shirts.
Corey will be at Throwback Weekend. I'll be at Occupy Wall Street. It'll be awesome. That's what we do,
60,
people.
Over 60.
Over Dude, 60 people on the spreadsheet.
60 people on an open Google Doc. Come on now.
Plus many other people who don't know what Google is.
They're
at
like
Throwback Weekend.
What?
Be there, people. Thank you so much to Dr. Hurley for joining us, talking about Green Bay, a city, and its team. Thank you to Jason Wilde for joining us this evening. Always a pleasure to have him on the program, have his insights here. CheeseheadTV.com, Packer Transplants Live. Thank you so much, Green Bay Packer fans worldwide. You are why we do what we do. We'll be back soon. Maybe not next week. Maybe 2 weeks from now. We'll be broadcasting from the live stream studios, possibly.
Maybe.
Or from Corey's backyard at his new place.
Or my backyard.
So be here. CheeseheadTV.com. Packer transplants. Packers are 5-0. About to go 6-0 for Throwback Weekend. We'll see you soon.